Patrick, mettila in mezzo Patrick, palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira, perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Il gol del capitano ancora! Ancora l'ultimo! Come Gilardino!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined as per usual by Anthony Torgrud.
Hi. What's up, guys? You can find me on Twitter at Torgrud45. We also got Madison with us.
Yeah, it's the first time that the three of us have been together after a good win. And you guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
It's the first win in a while, but not the first time.
Oh, my bad.
First this season.
First this season, there we go.
You know, one out of two.
Too bad.
Yeah, I just realized I forgot to plug my own Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. And as Madison's alluded to there, we've got a win to recap. We've got the transfer deadline stuff to recap as well. So it's going to be a pretty good one, pretty frantic one as well. We might as well start with the obvious thing before we move on to the Mercato madness that we've had over the last few days. We finally managed, I say finally, it was the second game of the season, but we got a win under our belts. First game at San Siro, beat Brescia 1-0 thanks to a goal from Hakan Çalhanoğlu inside the first 15 minutes, I think it was.
Yep.
Header at the far post, nice goal. So interestingly, the bit of this game that I missed, because I went to watch Huddersfield lose again, and that game finished at 5 and we kicked off at 5, so I managed to get back into the car just after Hakan had scored. So the bit of the game that I saw, we didn't score another goal, but honestly, I'm okay with that because we managed to get the win. Madison, I believe, didn't see this game. So Adrian, I'll throw it straight to you. It was a win that looks narrow on the score sheet itself, but stats-wise, we dominated the game. Overall, we dominated the game, but for a couple of brief spells. Should this be more than a 1-0 win?
Yeah, I mean, if you compare these stats to last week's stats, you would think they were two different teams. For comparison, last week we didn't have a single shot on target. This week we had 16 shots and 15 of them were big chances created. So, only 4 were on target, so we still didn't do big numbers there. But we got a goal, and honestly, the rest of them were saved. I mean, Brescia had a good goalkeeper. It seems to be a theme against us. But overall, we held the ball a shit ton more than they did. We passed around. Honestly, I think just about everyone looked good. I would say Rodriguez had a poor game. And there was one other person who had a poor game, and I honestly can't remember. Oh, Castillejo.
Yeah, Castillejo.
I thought they had poor games. Andre Silva got the start, so that was cool. I got to wear his jersey one last time before he bid farewell today. For those listening, we're recording on, obviously, right after the window just closed, and he's at Eintracht Frankfurt now. But yeah, he looked good, minus his passing kind of let him down. But the rest of it, his positioning and everything else was spot on. When Piontek and the rest of the starters came on, though, it was a totally different side. And honestly, I'm surprised we didn't win 3-0, 4-0. We looked really good. I'm extremely happy with this performance. I know we had to switch to a 4-3-2-1, the Christmas tree formation. At times, it looked like just a normal 4-3-3. But I'm really happy with how we looked. And seems like Jim Paul's getting the hang of it. Granted, it was just Brescia, but I think we'll be good. International break's coming up, so we'll see how we look when we return.
Yeah, good little summary there, I think. It's one of those where I think after the Udinese game, it was going to be difficult for it not to be better. You know, when we've gone from amassing zero shots on target, we couldn't possibly get any worse, or at least in theory. And it was nice. It was nice to see a performance where we got the early goal, as I keep saying on this podcast many times, said it last season, when we're at home and we've perhaps had a difficult result the game before or whatever, it's so important that we get that first goal early on in the game because it just eases the crowd and it just lets the players get into the flow of the game. And we always seem to play better when we get an early goal at home. And I'm glad that we got it, especially given, as I say, the nature of the performance in Udinese and how much scrutiny and how much pressure there was on us to bounce straight back. I thought it was a good performance overall. I think we looked like we had much more of an obvious shape. We looked like we knew what we were doing on and off the ball a bit better. The movement was better. The pressing for me was very good. But for a couple of times, and this is going to happen, where we opened ourselves up a little bit for that pass through the midfield. And that did happen on a couple of occasions. But that's going to happen when the opposition has a player like Sandro Tonali, who I thought was pretty good as well. So all in all, it was just important really to get the 3 points, regardless of what the scoreline was, regardless of what the stat line says. But it was a much, much better performance. And as you said there, AJ, I think one of the most promising signs from it all is that, you know, we saw substitutions come on and make a real impact, in particular Piontek, who I thought was unlucky not to score. He came on and actually looked involved in the game. He looked hungry. He looked like, you know, he wanted to desperately break the goal drought, if you want to call it that, from pre-season. And like I said, he was unlucky not to score. He was firing shots left, right and centre. But it's good to see, you know, it's good to see that it doesn't appear that his confidence has taken a knock. I thought the decision to start Andre Silva on the face of it was strange, but it was kind of explained afterwards that Piontek, at the moment, his physical condition is one that will require him to have rest every now and again. Whether you want to read more into that and find it a little bit worrying that he seems to suffer fatigue more so than other players, I don't know. But we'll see how that's managed throughout the season. And yeah, 3 points. It was so important that we got that going into the international break as well, because you don't want to be dwelling, you know, for 2 weeks without a game with us having 1 point or, God forbid, 0 points on the board. So it was good to get that win. And that obviously preceded the transfer deadline day that we've just had. But yeah, it's all good stuff. I mean, I also agree. I don't think Castillejo was good. I thought that Ricardo Rodriguez was probably the weak link in the back four. And Romagnoli and Musacchio, they weren't asked an awful lot of. Calabria, again, was shaky in points. But yeah, what do you think about Bennacer? You know, he was the man of the match as voted by the fans officially. And he was also given our man of the match for the ratings on site. It was a pretty much perfect first start for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, whoever did our ratings for the site clearly has a fantastic mind, because they all were spot on. I wrote them.
Yeah,
I was wondering. It was me. Surprise. No, Bennacer was fantastic. Every pass he made was so precise. And the craziest thing to me, that honestly, every single pass he made blew my mind, because the speed of every single ball, there was no way anyone was stopping him. I mean, they were just laser fast. It was really remarkable. We haven't had a Regista like that with, they could play both feet well, you know, and I was really impressed. You know, I think I expressed a lot of doubts before the season when we first signed him, because I never watched him. And I think I said it a lot on the podcast, but he was AFCON player of the year. And that's when I was like, okay, you know, maybe he is a lot better than just looking good at Empoli. And then he's played for us. And yeah, he came on as a sub against Udinese, and I thought he looked great for the few minutes he got. And then he played the full thing against Brescia and looked fantastic. So definitely got to watch. I think he's going to be critical this season. I think we might be done with Bigley at this point. I mean, if he keeps it up, there's no reason to go back. So definitely keep an eye out for that. The guy we signed today, though, might be a good replacement for Castillejo if we stick with this Christmas tree. What do you think?
I suppose, yeah, we might as well come on to it then. It was one of those where I think while we were recording the last podcast, it seemed like Angel Correa was the only possible name that we were going to get over the line between the time of recording and the transfer window shutting at 10 Central European time on Monday. In the end, we were completely wrong about that. We sprung a late surprise. On Sunday, it came out. A few different places started reporting it. And then obviously we got a couple of exclusives from our guy, Vito Angeli. Go follow him on Twitter if you don't already, because he's been bang on this summer about quite a lot of stuff. So that's at Vito Angeli.
I actually talked to Vito today, and he informed me that he's turning his phone off for the foreseeable future. He's done. He's over.
Yeah, and I don't blame him at all, to be honest. He gets asked a lot of questions. When he provides these updates, I always find it funny how many people are in his replies asking about other players. Mm-hmm. When he has information, he'll give it, you know what I mean? But now Vito's been fantastic for us this summer, and he's worked his ass off over this summer, so fair play to him for that. And yeah, he sent us an exclusive on Sunday while all the stuff was coming out about Rebic, basically saying that the negotiations were at an advanced stage. That it would be a loan swap, and that, you know, everything was moving in the right direction. And then next thing you know, on Sunday evening, Eintracht have confirmed that Rebic wouldn't be playing in their game against Fortuna Dusseldorf. Then it all transpired that he was travelling to Italy, to Milan specifically, where he'd arrive in the evening and do his medicals today on the Monday. And that is exactly how it went. There was half an hour when Di Marzio threw a little bit of doubt on everything and said that there was some complications on Andre Silva's side of the deal. But it's all been done and dusted. He's been unveiled as a Milan player today, and Andre Silva's been unveiled as a new player for Eintracht as well. So it's a 2-year loan swap, and a lot of reports from various outlets said that it was the loan spells respectively were 5 million. And that there was an option to buy of 20 million for each player. So it was basically a direct swap in that sense, in terms of the valuations. But then no mention of an option to buy from either club's statement, which I found a little bit weird. Starting with, you know, Rebic as a whole, do you think that he's going to be a decent addition to this squad? Maddie, I'll start with you. How's he gone?
Yeah, no, I'm here. I had myself on mute so you guys can hear me. But I think he will be good. I think he'll be a good depth player. I don't know if he's just going to come in and start right away. But competition is something that this team needs for every position. And I'm excited to see him join the team. I have not seen much of him play, but looking at his stats online and his tendencies, he looks like a good player. He's 6'1 as well, so he will be a commanding presence in the midfield. And I'm sorry, AJ, but I think that Andre Silva was like, I think it's good that he's gone. So
yeah, I mean, I wouldn't disagree with that. I'm not naive. He is one of my favorite players, but I know when the time's up, you know. And it was remarkable we kept him past the Monaco debacle. So I'm okay with it, and I think we're getting a good amount of money. I think the amortization is going to show up as a big profit for us if they do take up that option. And if not, then we got 5 mil and got him off our salary for a little bit. I mean, he was making 3.6 Absolutely. Million a year with us, and Rebic is going to make 2.2, I believe, was what the option was, or that's what he's currently making. So there's obviously savings there. On top of, well, I guess there isn't any profit with the 5 million because we spent 5 on him. So definitely savings in the salary. I watched a decent amount of Bundesliga because it's the only league that's on a major network outside of the Premier League. And, you know, ESPN obviously does Serie A a little bit, but most of the time it's on streaming devices. So anyways, watched Bundesliga. Wasn't that impressed with him, to be honest. He had a fantastic World Cup, but that's two different things. We all know how some players show up for national teams more so. But yeah, you know, we do need another player for that Christmas tree formation if we're doing two attacking mids like that with Suso. I think Rebic is a good partner for him. Like Matty said, he's 6'1". That's obviously an important thing. He's got the strength and ability to push around people. He's tall enough to win the aerial duels. And he's not skinny like Castillejo. So he's going to be able to actually fend off some defenders there and make the passes that are necessary. I think it'll be good for us. I'm kind of rambling here, but...
How much longer do you guys think that we're going to have to watch Castillejo as a starter?
A few more weeks. I don't think Rebic is going to start just because Gianpaolo's always so far been like, it's got to adapt my mentality first. And that's why we're seeing Castillo play. That's why we saw Barini play over Kessie. And I think it's going to be a little bit with international break. We're going to see another shitty lineup to go against AS Verona when we return on the 15th.
Yeah, obviously he's signed for us and has gone straight out, literally flew straight out tonight to join up with the Croatian national team for their games. So he definitely won't start that game against Hellas Verona. Then it becomes a question of, what can be done in that week to get him ready for starting the game against Inter. I think if there's a chance of him playing, you know, even 60 minutes against Inter, then we probably do that, because Gianpaolo knows that, you know, we can't continue starting Castillejo, because it's basically like playing with 10 men at the moment. He's just not commanded that role at all. And it's playing for everybody to see, basically, that he's not... I don't think he's up to it mentally or physically. And I know that sounds like I'm absolutely blasting him. I don't think he was awful last season, but he was being put in a position that was more favoured to him as a left winger, obviously. Likes being more direct, likes running in behind. Quite frankly, I don't think he has, like I say, the skill set or the mentality to be able to play support striker or to be able to play, you know, somewhere in behind as an attacking midfielder. It just doesn't work for him. So that hole opened up, and I'm glad that we've gone out and addressed it. I think it was very clear from, you know, earlier on in the summer, it's been clear for over a month, that Andres Silva is not part of Marco Giampaolo's plans. I never read too much into the fact that he started on Saturday against Brescia, to be honest. I think that was more a physicality... a recovery thing, you know, physically for Piontek. And I think he honestly wanted to maybe put him in the shop window a little bit as well, Silva, and it did that, because it wasn't a woeful performance from Andre. He showed what he can do and perhaps how he can work if he has someone alongside him who's a more natural poacher and doesn't snatch at chances. But yeah, it's one of those deals that, like I say, I think it makes sense. What we're getting is somebody who has the ability to adapt to a number of different roles for us, which is useful when we're not absolutely 100% set on a system at this point moving forward. Perhaps Gianpaolo in his head is fixed on a system now. He's going to go with the 4-3-2-1 and stick with it. Or he's going to find games, you know, where he decides that a 4-3-3 is going to be best, or that he's going to revert to playing with two up front, or... We don't know really how it's going to work moving forward, but the beauty of having someone like Rebic in the team is that he can play as a support striker. He has played as a player in behind the strikers, feeding Sebastian Haller and Luka Jovic last season. You know, they formed quite a fearsome trio last season at Eintracht. And we've got a guy who is an incredibly hard worker. One of the best compliments that I've seen used about Rebic is that he's a battler. You know, he never really gives up, and you can't keep him out of the game because he's always trying to get on the ball and trying to plow through the defence by any means. And honestly, I think we're kind of lacking a player like that. We haven't really had that since we had an injury-free Bonaventura. You know, someone who tries to just pile through the defence and get the way to go by any means necessary. So I'm looking forward to seeing him play. I think financially, the terms of the deal make a lot of sense as well. I do think there will be an option to buy in there, or an obligation to buy, or something like that. With the deal, I don't see why an exchange of a 2-year dry loan would make any sense, to be honest. It might be that the actual breakdown of the fee for the option to buy wasn't defined before the deadline, and they will talk about it, you know, over the next 2 years. They've basically got 2 years to figure it out. So we'll see on that front. And yeah, it's, again, as I've said multiple times during the Mercato on this podcast, you kind of just got to trust the leadership until they give us a reason not to. I think it's interesting that we were linked with so many other players. Obviously, as we mentioned, Angel Correa being one of them, Everton Suarez, Memphis Depay, Rodrigo De Paul. But Rebic was the one that we went for aggressively and managed to get it tied up pretty much within a day. So that shows that the player was willing to come as well. And we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. But fingers crossed that he hits the ground running. In terms of the players that we were linked with and we missed out on, one of them that popped up late on, this was another one that kind of came out yesterday and rumbled on into today. Vito told us this morning that Rebic wouldn't be the only signing that we were looking at. We were going to try and bring in another attacking midfielder. The guy mentioned was Tyson of Shakhtar Donetsk. I would be lying if I said I'd seen a lot about him, but I was surprised to see us going for him, because he's a 31-year-old with a 30 mil release clause. After the recruitment drive all summer had been young players for cheaper fees than that with high potential, I was a bit shocked to see us seriously linked with Tyson. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, you know, age doesn't bother me. It's not as big of a factor as I think people make it out to be. when you're proven. You know, like Luka Modric obviously is world class, and he's 34, something like that. We were linked with him for a while. That was a move everyone was clamoring for. Tyson's 31 and still playing for Shakhtar. I mean, we all thought he was dope when he was playing alongside Luis Adriano and Douglas Costa. You know, when that was their trident, everyone thought they were a sick team, and I think they even made it to the knockouts of the Champions League that year. But now, you know, when all his support's gone and he's kind of the only star, he's never really done anything on the big stage and made a real name for himself. People probably recognize him as that random guy that you see in FIFA that you get in every pack because he's just not highly rated. But 30 million is just ridiculous for him, and I think that's why we never got him. You know, we supposedly offered 25 million. They said that's too low, and we said, well, you're high if you think anything more than that is worth it. So we backed out, and I don't have any problem with that. I'm glad we did. I don't think he would have made sense as a signing. When we got Bonaventura, who could play that attacking mid, Rebic, Suso, Paqueta, I mean, the list goes on. So I don't think it was necessary to add another one, and I think we made the right move on letting that one go.
Yeah, I do wonder how much of it was down to the way that he started the season. He was obviously one of those players that saw the name and thought, yeah, he's one of those six or seven Brazilian attacking midfielders that Shakhtar Donetsk have. So he was trying to narrow it down to which one he is. But he scored two goals and had three assists in four league games so far this season. So I don't know how much of the move was weighted on his recent form, because the numbers that he's put up before that weren't exactly, you know, mind-blowing. And it's in a league where, you know, with no... It does sound a bit disrespectful, but with no disrespect to the Ukrainian Premier League, you know, you're going to have to be putting up unbelievable numbers to warrant a 30 million euro transfer from there. But anyway, for whatever reason, I think we either offered 20 or 25. I'd seen conflicting reports on that, and they were holding out for 30, or they wanted a little bit more than what we were offering, which they're more than entitled to ask for because he's their captain, which I didn't really know. But yeah, I think it made sense to walk away from that one. And yeah, well, we didn't end up moving on to any other targets, really. There's normally at least some late drama where, like, with 3 hours to go, we're linked with someone out of the blue, but it just didn't really come this time.
I think
that
would have been Rebic, but just props to our management for getting that deal done quick, honestly. Because I think that would have been on that last minute deadline hour thing.
Yeah,
I would have been. I mean, I feel like the past week or so, his name hasn't been mentioned much. And then just kind of came out, you know, when we signed him.
Yeah, I can't remember. We were linked with him earlier in August, I want to say, we were linked with him. But it was nothing ever that serious. It was just that he was a potential alternative to Correa. And it never got any further than that. And then it just makes you wonder how many kind of options we cycled through and thought, that's not going to, you know... For example, Everton Suarez, that's not going to be possible because the way that the deal would be structured would be difficult. His ownership is split into like four different parties, which I don't know how that's allowed to happen, to be honest, but it's, you know, Brazilian player ownership. And then you got Memphis Depay, who quite frankly would not have been available for 30 to 40 mil like people, or like some reports were saying, because he's far too important to Lyon. Rodrigo de Paul, maybe we could have gone for. I like him. I think he's a good player, but I'm not necessarily sure that he would have been a direct fit for the system at this point. And also, given his importance to Udinese, I don't think we'd have got much change from 50 million euros. So I think it's just a case of working through the targets and establishing that actually Rebic was the only realistic one that we could get over the line inside 48 hours. And that's exactly what's happened.
And to be honest, I think it was the best case. Like, if you look at the other guys, I mean, Rodrigo de Paul, you can make a good argument that he was better because he knows the league already. But I think the guy we got, Rebic, is far better than Correa and obviously far cheaper as well. So I think we made the right move with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. So what we'll
What's
do now.
What's your overall rating of the window?
Well, I was actually just going to go through with each of you and sort of get a rating on what you think of each signing that we've made this summer, and then rate the Mercato overall. So we'll do this kind of quick fire thing. Starting, we'll go chronologically. Theo Hernandez arrived for a 20 million fee. We'll give it an out of 10 rating. I'll start. I like this one. I think he's going to be very important for the way that Giampaolo wants to play moving forward. He's young, has potential. Don't think 20 million is too much because there aren't an abundance of great left backs around at the moment. So I'm giving this one a 7.5 out of 10.
I was going to say 8.
I was going to say 8 as well.
Yeah, let's do whole numbers to make it interesting. No, no half marks. 8 out of 10 for me then as well. Round it up. Rade Krunic, he joined for a fee of about 8 million. I'm guessing he'll be viewed as more of a depth option, but as I've said in our group chat that we have more recently, I'm beginning to get concerned that we maybe could have saved that 8 million and put it towards getting a deal for someone more useful over the line. Obviously, we missed out on the likes of Stefano Sensi, we missed out on Veretout, missed out on other midfield targets. Could we have used that 8 million better? Also, I'll be surprised if he starts 10 Serie A games for us this season, but it's depth and we needed it because we had Mauri Bertolacci and Montolivo leave this summer. It's just hard to get excited about it. I'll give it a 5 out of 10 straight down the middle.
Yeah, I mean, if we're basing it off the player himself, I'd say probably like a 4, honestly. But given the situation, the depth, the fact that 8 million in today's market is absolute pennies, I'd say probably like a 6. I think we could spend that 8 million better, but the depth was so important for all the reasons you said. So I'll give it a 6.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go with AJ here. I think in today's market, a depth signing for 8 million is pretty good. And I mean, we haven't seen much of him yet, so it's kind of hard to tell how he's going to mesh with the team to really see how big of an impact that he will be able to have, but hopefully he'll have a pretty large impact.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I just thought of something then when you guys were talking about that, and I'm not going to change my mark on it, but it fills me with confidence knowing that if we were to have another kind of midfield injury crisis like we had last season, we're going to be seeing Krunic's name in there, and he was the main creative force for Empoli last season. You know, he got double figures in combined goals and assists. He'll be in the starting lineup rather than a Mauri or a Bertolacci or something like that. So that represents an upgrade in depth for me. So
right, and perhaps, you know, remember the 8 million that was all covered by the salary we save from all those outgoing players. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. So it really he cost us nothing.
Mm-hmm. Third signing in the summer was Rafael Leao from Lille, 28 million fee. 20-year-old striker, Portugal under 21 international. Like what I've seen of him, the little bit we saw in pre-season and the little bit we saw when he came on against Udinese.
Third signing. Sorry, I was thinking about
it. Yeah, well, I mean, the ordering all ended up being messed up because Krunic was the first one over the line, but right. It took ages to be announced.
And Benacer was Hernandez. Second.
And yeah, exactly. And then Hernandez ended up beating both of them to it because, you know, he was the one who was available to come and sign the contracts and all that kind of stuff, I guess. Yeah, and then Leao came third. I like what I've seen of him. I think he's a very dynamic player. Surprised, you know, just his size and his speed suggests to me that he's going to become very powerful. And once he shakes off a bit of that rawness, then he's going to be really, really good for us moving forward. And I think, again, the fee, it could represent a bargain down the line. And it's an exciting signing, and it's symbolic of the path that we're trying to go down. I will go with a 8 out of 10 on this.
So originally, I would have said a 9 because I think Leao is fantastic. I think he's going to be one of the future stars of football. But I'm not going to give it a 9. I'm going to give it a 6. And that's because of the change of formation. You know, when I was under the impression it was him and Piontek starting up top every game, fantastic. But now that he's going to be a bench player, it seems like, with the new formation, I feel like we spent a bit much for a bench player. But he's got all that potential. He's so good. And he's younger than Piontek. So who knows? Like you mentioned earlier, Piontek's got fatigue issues. So maybe we see a lot more of Leao. Maybe that's who starts, you know, going against whoever we play next. I can't remember. It's Verona.
Verona, yeah.
Yeah, maybe we see Leao from the start, actually. I don't know. I'm going to say 6 out of 10 solely based on the fact that he's going to be benched and we spent a lot of money on him.
I'm going to say a 7. I think that we got a good signing with a young player who has loads of potential. I kind of agree with AJ where we did sign him for a different formation, but he has a different kind of hustle than Piontek has. And I believe that he will give Piontek a hard shot to be the starter by the end of the season.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Liao as well is that he seems to be versatile. You know, I've heard people who used to coach him and experts say that he can play either as a support striker or as an out-and-out centre-forward. So that suggests to me that he's going to be battling with Piontek, and who knows, there might even be a situation where he gets some game time playing in behind, or if we revert to two up front, then that's going to work in his favour too. I agree with what you actually said before, AJ, with the Krunic thing about how you can give a rating for the player that you've signed, and you can give a rating for you know what you think in terms of how the deal makes sense. So I'm gonna stick with an 8 on that though, and hope that he proves me right. So then next we've got Leo Duarte, who arrived from Flamengo.
Yep.
Flamengo in Brazil, Paqueta's former teammate, of course. He came for 11 million, 5-year deal. So we needed to replace Christian Zapata, who left on a free at the end of the season because his contract ran out and we didn't manage to agree terms on a new one with him. He's now gone to Genoa and he's doing really well for them by all accounts. This is an interesting one. He's, how old is he? 23 years old, I want to say. I don't view him at this moment in time. Yeah, he's 23. I don't view him at this moment in time as a direct upgrade on Christian Zapata. I see him more likely to be like the next Gustavo Gomez than somebody who's going to be challenging for a starting spot. But I hope to be proven wrong on that one. I've had my doubts about this, and it's another one where I think that could that 11 million have been used better? You know, he won't be on a huge wage, but in terms of the transfer fee itself, I think could that have actually gone towards signing a player with more experience that could have been more useful for our back line, or even going for someone like Gianluca Mancini, who we ended up losing out to Roma on. For that reason, a bit like the Krunic one, it doesn't really inspire me loads, and the money, don't know, could it have been used better? I'll go with a 4.
I was going to go with a 3. Basically, everything you said and a little more, you're right. I think it could have been used to go for Mancini or Demiral or anyone else that we were linked with that was a clear upgrade. You know, we signed Leo Duarte for the... Sorry, I just got a notification on my phone and totally lost track there. We signed Leo Duarte as a backup. I know you said Zapata, but Musacchio is not a good backup as is. And he's starting because Caldar is out. We signed Leo Duarte as a third string, whereas we needed to sign a second string, in my opinion, and make Musacchio that third string. We didn't do that. And honestly, I haven't seen anything of Leo Duarte. He's played very little in preseason, so I have nothing to go off of. I've never seen him play an actual game. But it doesn't excite me at all. I think the money could have been spent better, and it sounds like he's going to be third string. So to me, this is a miss.
Yeah, Madison.
Yeah, I am on board with both of you guys. I'm not very motivated by this transfer. It is very clearly a depth signing. I'm going to have to go with a 4 as well. I think that he's not going to be, once all of our center backs are healthy, I don't think that he's going to be able to fight for a starting position. And maybe he might come off the bench in like a Coppa Italia game, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's one of those where I hope to be proven wrong, because if we are proven wrong on that, then it's going to be an absolute bargain, basically. And who knows? You know, we've unearthed some gems before at centre-back. The obvious one to think about would be Thiago Silva. So, yeah, just hope
he's at least taller than Musacchio. I mean, he's 6 foot tall, so there's that.
Yeah, I've said this so many times on here that I think we needed to go for an absolute unit of a centre-back to complement Alessio Roma, but also acknowledge that Gianpaolo likes both his centre-backs to be good on the ball and to be able to play out from the back. This is why I'm beginning to feel like we shouldn't have been so dismissive on the whole Dejan Lovren thing. The more I think about it, you know, okay, if it would have actually cost 25 million, then no, walk away straight away. But if the rumours were true and Roma basically had the chance to sign him for like 15 mil, I wouldn't have minded us putting, you know, the 11 mil towards someone like Lovren, experience at the highest level, you know, in Champions League finals, etc. And quite frankly, a physical commanding centre-back who, because of the way that Klopp's teams play, is also good with the ball at his feet. I don't know. I just think, I feel like the more and more I think about it, that'd have made sense and it'd have seen us through for the next couple of years until we could find, you know, the next partner for Romagnoli, because I don't think Duarte is, at this moment in time, I don't think he's ever going to become the established partner for Romagnoli moving forward. So, not sure, not sure. That might be a bit of a Mercato regret, really. So that's Duarte. Then we had Bennacer, who came for 16 million plus bonuses from Empoli. Obviously, just after we got everything tied up, he went to the African Cup of Nations and instantly made that 16 million look like an absolute bargain. It's so important that we got a register in or a deep line playmaker, whatever you want to call them, a pivot, because of the way that Gianpaolo likes his teams to play. And ultimately, one thing we need to remember about all of this is that even if he does opt to change system ever so slightly, the midfield three and the way that works isn't going to change. You know, it's still going to be important that those three have good chemistry and that the base of the midfield works both in a positional sense, in terms of breaking up the play, etc., and is also the guy who starts attacks. And Bennacer looks so far, especially based on the start that we saw him against Brescia, he looks like he can do that and more. I think if you were to, if we'd have tried to push through a deadline day deal for this, for example, I think we'd have been paying more than double what we've ended up paying for him. So for that reason, I'm going to give this a 9. I'm going to give it a 9. AJ?
Go to Maddie.
I, based off of what I've read about Saturday's game, I mean, I will say 9 as well. He had an amazing tournament with Algeria this summer. I think we got a deal.
All right. Yeah. Sorry, the only reason I said pass to Maddie is because, to be honest, I zoned out and didn't know which player we were on. But Bobin just started speaking to Sky, so I was reading that, so it wasn't, like, non-work related. But, yeah, I would say, honestly, probably a 10. He's young. We got a fucking steal. He's an animal. I think this is the best signing of our mercato.
I do really like... Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is the best signing that we made, both in terms of value and in terms of potential importance to the team. Mm. Also, like, upside, the amount that he's 22 years old?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I think 22 or 21 and years old, so he's going to grow. I like his number.
Yeah,
he's
21. Too.
He's 21, so he's got 4 years until he's in his prime and he's in his... You know, the way that I'm always think about the Bennacer deal is that we basically walked away from a deal for Lucas Torreira because the money involved was too much. You know, we'd have been paying 40 million euros for a player that, quite frankly, was, by the sounds of it, pushing for a move back to Italy anyway. So we go and pick up this guy for a third of the price, maybe less. And he's already shown signs that he could become as important to Gianpaolo in the system as what Torreira was for him at Sampdoria. So signs on this are good and hope that he continues to show promise because, you know, it's going to look like more and more of a bargain basically moving forward. And I really like the idea of him and Kessier to the right and then Rebic, you know, playing over as that left attacking midfielder, just having pace and power down the middle of the pitch for us is going to strike fear into a lot of teams. I think it's going to make us a lot more effective on the counter as well and not as wasteful if Kessier stops lacing shots 30 yards over the crossbar. So the last one that we got is Ante Rebic, who came in on deadline day, obviously. He's down as a 2-year loan at a cost of $5 million, but we'll see if anything comes out about that being an option to make permanent. We kind of talked about this and whether it makes sense or not, but in terms of giving it a grading, I will go with a... I'm going to go with a 7 on this. I think he's a player that, as mentioned before, can fit multiple positions within this formation. I think, you know, the age that we're getting him at, 25, and the experiences that he's had, he's already played a few games in Serie A, he's been to Germany, he's played for Red Bull Leipzig, he's played for Eintracht Frankfurt and helped contribute towards their kind of big rise that they've had over the last couple of seasons. I think he'll be coming here to prove a point, quite frankly. He clearly wanted the move, and we wanted him in. Just hope that this is a match made in heaven. And based on the other targets that we were linked with, I think that this financially makes quite a lot of sense. So, yeah, I'll go with a 7 on this.
AJ, you want to go?
Yeah, I was just thinking still. I'm going to say a 6, just because, I don't know. Like I said, I wasn't too fond of him in Bundesliga, but his World Cup was fantastic, and I think the move made a lot of sense. So I'm going to say 6. And, you know, maybe by the end of the season it'll be higher based on how he performs, but I don't know.
I'm going to go with the 7. I like having big, strong midfielders on the team. I feel like it's not something that we've had for some time. He did have a great World Cup 2 years ago, was it now? Last summer, so a year ago.
Last summer,
yeah. He's on his national team, and I think that in Italy, having stronger, taller midfielders helps because it's more of a, I don't know what I'm trying to say, it's technical league, I guess. Yeah, I think it's a great signing. I hope that he pans out and we can sign him on a full transfer.
Yeah, or fingers permanent. Crossed. Yeah, we'll see about that. I find it a bit weird that neither team mentioned about having an option to buy or anything like that. And then finally, a grade overall. I guess you basically averaging it out and also factoring in the departures, you know, Cutrone and Andre Silva leaving because they were deemed surplus to requirements. I'm still gutted that Cutrone's gone and Andre Silva's gone, yeah. I'm gutted for you, AJ, because you now announced your resignation from the site as a result.
Yeah.
Which is a real shame. We'll miss you.
I was out of town all weekend at a bachelor party where I had no service, and I get on the podcast and you guys are like, Andre Silva's gone and we signed Rebic, and I was like, whoa, what happened this weekend? So
not even this weekend, that was like 3 hours ago.
Right. And so I was just like completely out of it. So yeah, I'd go on the site and I was like, where'd Andre Silva go? And then I had to do a little quick research, but yeah
ugly jerseys. Well, I actually, because I don't know, I'm a weirdo, I actually added up all my scores and gave it an average, and I got a 6.16, but I forgot about departures, so it's gonna be a 0 for this Mercato because we got rid of Andre Silva. In all honesty, I think it's probably like a 7, and I know we're not doing halves. Somewhere between 7 and 8. I'll let the fans decide.
That's not allowed.
I know.
Okay, for this one, you can do halves, I think.
Okay, then I'm going to say 7.5. Just because I think we made good reinforcements. We really didn't sell any senior point. We only sold Cutrone. Everyone else was a loan or expiration of contract. The only other people we sold were youth players, but obviously no one's counting that. I mean, we signed 3 more youth players today. I guarantee no one's heard of any of them, so whatever. But yeah, so 7.5.
It's interesting that you say that. I'm going to go on a little bit of an off tangent here. The Primavera kind of had a busy day. I think they ended up signing 3 players.
Yeah.
Bagiel was offloaded, who we signed and everyone assumed was going to be pretty good for us.
A lot of those players, like Dijalo, Thiago Diaz, is that what his name? I can't remember. There was a bunch of like youth people that everyone got hyped when Mirabelli just started fucking flaunting his dick for the kids. That's a bad statement.
Whoa,
sorry.
Oh, that is a horrific.
We'll have to edit that one out.
Keep
Madison
it in.
Takeover.
Keep sorry. It in. With context, that's all right, but people are definitely going to cut that and use it.
Yeah, that's bad. But yeah, Mirabelli took a lot of people and they weren't good.
Yeah, the Primavera has undergone a bit of an overhaul this summer, basically, is the bottom line. And rightly so, because we got relegated last season from the top flight of the Primavera for the first time in a long time. I can't remember exactly where it is, and I won't guess either. But things are on the up because we got Giunti in as the head coach, and we won a tournament over the weekend where we were in it against Inter in the semi-finals. We beat them, and they were the previous Scudetto holders, I believe, for the Primavera. And then we beat Juve in the final. So the signs are pretty good on that front. I think they might have finally cleaned house and got something working there, which is always good, because you look at the core of our team now and the players that have come through there, you know, your Donnarumma, Calabria, Cotrone, who's obviously left, but, you know, the talented players, and we need to get back to being a production line in that sense. So... anyway, back to the whole average for the Mercato. I am also going to give it a 7.5. I like the additions. I think we've stuck to a vision of signing players with potential and players that are not going to financially cripple us, touch wood. And the departures kind of make sense as well, in terms of Silva was deemed surplus to requirements and we got someone in to replace him. Cotrone's in there to cover, you know, on the balance books, he's 18 million, covers the 90 million on the five of the signings, you know, if you spread that out over 5 years. So that made a lot of sense. And it was just nice to see, as I say, recruitment with a bit of a vision and an idea of how we wanted to do it. So for that reason, I'll give it a 7.5. The only reason that it's not any higher than that is because it remains to be seen whether it will translate to A, success on the pitch quickly, or B, success on the pitch at all. You know, we might not actually be targeting a top three finish this season, for example. It might be that the vision is to challenge for a Scudetto in 2 to 3 years or something like that. So be interesting to see how this core develops and how the young players that we've signed grow with this team and hopefully with Gianpaolo. Manny, what's your rating?
I'm going to have to go with a 6.5. I feel like we signed a lot of players on promise and potential. So I feel like we've been doing that a lot lately, like the past, I don't know, since we sold Thiago Silva and Ibrahimovic. So it's been rough transfers as AC Milan fans. This summer, I have a good feeling, but I'm still going to go with 6.5, only because we didn't bring in any superstar signings. No, you know, Mr. X or whatever the media used to call it. So it's all a gamble, you know, and it's always a gamble, but... You know, we signed two players from Empoli, some players from outside the league, a player from Brazil who is most likely not going to see more than, you know, 5 to 10 games all season. Hopefully they pan out and their potential is reached and this team can turn it around, because this fan base needs something to look up to and hopefully be happy about.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully we've massively underestimated it, and it turns out to be a 10 out of 10 Mercato. It remains to be seen. Interestingly, Di Marzio came out earlier this evening and basically said that this is just the first window. You know, the revolution is, he called it a revolution, is set to continue in the winter and next summer. So it goes to show that the owners and that Gazidis and the rest of the leadership are fully set on implementing this vision over a number of windows and assembling a squad that's going to take us back to the top. So I really liked to hear that. You know, we might not have got everyone through the door that we wanted to in this window, but we also didn't massively panic and make any financially catastrophic decisions.
That's actually a really good segue into what I was reading earlier, Boban's comments to the sky, because he talks about the future of our Mercatos. Is it cool if I just read that off?
Yeah, go for it, man.
All right, so the first thing that he was asked about was Modric, obviously, and he said he's an unlikely Milan player, but he is a friend. We never got things done. Then he talked about Correa. They said we couldn't find an agreement on the economic basis. So that's what it comes down to, was the difference with Atletico and us. And then he said, we have a good squad. We've made good purchases. There'll be important players soon. We gave a signal to change. And then he went on and said, young people are good, but there must be players with experience and strength. We have many young players. Perhaps it would have been good to have a few more experts. The Milanisti have been waiting so long. Neither Paolo nor myself want to wait so long to make things great happen. So it sounds like the next few windows, we might be going for some bigger name, more established players. Kind of feeding that. I don't know. I mean, obviously that's a good statement to end any Mercato with is, you know, myself and the other director want things to happen quickly. So that gives us a little hope, but who knows what will happen.
Yeah, they are interesting comments. I was giving them a skim read because they came out while we started recording this. Exactly as I thought regarding Modric, it was always unrealistic. And then obviously the Correa stuff, as expected, was all about a difference in the fee. But yeah, it's a process, and I'm glad that that Boban and Maldini are kind of on the same page about how they want to get us back to the top. That's all reassuring stuff to hear, and it's exactly how we thought as well. Yeah, let's go to the questions then, shall we? And okay, so the first one is an interesting one. It comes from Christian Espinoza. Asks us questions every week, so good on him. Where do you think Milan, Inter, and Juve would finish if they were in the Premier League?
I could tell you we'd be close to 10th. I think the top six in the Prem are pretty solid right now. I think they'd be better than us. I think Juve would still challenge for the title. And I think Inter was the other team, right? I think they'd be pushing for Champions League, but maybe not securing it.
Yeah, I think you've got to basically compare each team individually against the others and see where they are. I think Juve are behind Liverpool and Man City and would be over a 38-game season. And I think they're ahead of Spurs, Chelsea, Arsenal, Man United. So I would stick them in third. They could possibly nick second. I'm not sure. I just see them coming unstuck at teams where they wouldn't, where there is no equivalent in Serie A. You know, like a Wolves or a Leicester, teams like that, that, you know, there isn't really much of an equivalent. And I don't mean this by any, you know, I don't mean any disrespect by this to Serie A. I think it's just sort of widely accepted that at the moment the Premier League's perhaps just that little step ahead in terms of quality. And especially at the top end, as you mentioned. So Inter, I think, would be around about fifth or sixth, maybe. I'm comparing them at the moment in my head to kind of a Man United. Or I think they finish above Chelsea but below Man United over 38 games, basically. I don't think they're as good as Spurs either. Or maybe even Arsenal. And then Milan would be seventh. I think we'd be seventh. I think we're better than Wolves. I think we're better than Everton. But it's
good. Do you think
we're
better than any of the top six in the Premier League?
No, that's why I said seventh.
Well, but if you're adding in Inter and Juve also, then that pushes us down to ninth.
I think it was more, because then it would be if you're adding all three, it'd all of a sudden be a 23-team league.
Right, so it's been people, but that's how I was basing mine. It's fine. It's not a big deal. That's just how I was viewing it.
I see what you mean. If you include the other two then and you just expand it, then yeah, you probably bump us down to like ninth.
I think we could beat Arsenal though. That would be the one side I think we could finish above in the top six.
Yeah. It's a difficult one though. I like that question. It's good. It reminds me of a question that gets asked a lot when it comes to English or British football about how like Celtic and Rangers would get on in the Premier League or in English football, you know, in terms of teams that are perhaps too big for their current leagues or whatever. But yeah, it's a good question. Maddie, what do you think? Would Milan finish above your beloved Everton?
Yes, I think so. It's so hard to say how would these teams finish in different leagues because every league has a different style of play. And the Premier League is such an unattractive style of play that I don't even know what their style is. But I think AC Milan would finish above Everton. I think it would take them getting used to because it's such an aggressive league, but yes, they would. I think Juve would challenge for first place. And Inter would not get Champions League.
Because
you think about it, Juve, Manchester City, Liverpool, top three. Is Inter going to be fourth? I don't think Inter will be fourth. I bet someone else would.
I think Spurs would be above them.
Yeah, probably.
I do. But that's a really good question, actually. That's a really good question. Anyway, moving on to some of the other ones. At Concord underscore IT or LT. Rebic on two-year loan with no option to buy. What if he does good? How can we buy him 2 years from now? We only think that there's no option to buy because it wasn't mentioned in the statement. My guess is that there'll be some kind of gentleman's agreement in there. If they both do well, then it'll basically just be a straight swap. If not, then they'll have to negotiate some kind of fee that's involved. Don't know if either of you two have got out to add on that. We kind of talked about it a bit.
Yeah, I think it'll either be, like you said, a gentleman's agreement written in there to where, I guess I want to be a gentleman's agreement, but same thing, you know, written in there to where if we both want to take up the new players, it'd just be a straight swap. The fees are pretty similar. Or it would be a first refusal clause in there, you know. And then over the 2 years, obviously, we'd work out a price, which is a bit dangerous. You know, if one starts performing more than the other, then one release clause is going to be pushed for smaller and one's going to be pushed for higher. So it would be in our best interest to wrap that up quickly. But I think those are the most realistic things. And that's why the club didn't disclose it, because we already said earlier, we're not taking dry loans. So there's definitely something there, but it wasn't announced because we don't have it defined yet. I think it was just put in because it's deadline day. But yeah, I'm sure it'll be a first refusal or something like that, or just a straight swap deal.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think if we want him, we offer him money. That's how we do it.
Insightful.
Pretty straightforward. You know. Yeah.
Still to be perhaps completely agreed, you know, in a concrete sense. What do you, this comes from at Seb Luskin. What do you think is the most likely lineup once all the players are established? So I'm guessing obviously it means that once Rebic is into the fold and everything like that. This is a good one. I think the back four will be, obviously, Donnarumma in goal. I think it'd be Calabria, Caldara, Romagnoli, Theo Hernandez, Ishmael Benacer, Frank Kessie, Lucas Paqueta, Rebic and Suso in behind Piontek.
Well, fuck, that was literally exactly what I was going to say. So I'll just change it up a bit to be different and say Paqueta instead of Rebic and fucking Bonaventura left center mid there. Just to be different. Even though Bonaventura trains with the attackers and Piontek doesn't. But whatever.
Maddie?
Oh my god. What I think the lineup will be, I think Piontek will be starting with Suso and Krebic, or however you say his name is, as center attacking with Paqueta, Kessie, and Bonaventura in midfield. With
Benacer dropped.
Fuck.
Oh, wait, no.
We just said he was a 10 out of 10 signing. That was great signing.
I forgot about him.
Title of the podcast. See, is 10 out of 10 Benacer dropped.
This is good because we have depth. I just forgot about the players. Benacer, Paqueta, and Bonaventura in the midfield. Is that better?
Yeah, it's weird, but yeah.
Okay, I mean, okay, good. Kadara or Calabria. Ooh. Hang on. It's been a long weekend. Romagnoli.
Train wreck.
Caldara and Hernandez.
And we what, Antonio Donnarumma in goal?
Antonio Donnarumma playing goal, yeah.
Antonio. Cool. I like it. That was painful.
Was actually painful. Anyway, moving on. At Vico underscore 47. Yeah, this kind of feeds into to what you mentioned, AJ. Do you think Giampaolo needs to give Paqueta a more attacking role?
Yes.
It was amazing in the last 15 minutes against Brescia when he was playing more like an attacking midfielder. I think the answer to this is we don't need to nail him down a role now. There's no point doing that. You know, there'll be games this season where he will play as a mezzala. And there'll be games where we can push him up to play more as an attacking midfielder. There's no point saying he can only do one thing. There's players who can play as a winger or a centre forward. There's players who can play, you know, defensive midfield or central midfield. There's, you know, I just don't see any reason to nail any colours to the mast right now. And let's just see moving forward what works.
I think it's definitely an interesting question because I know I chimed in immediately and said yes, and I just said I'd have him an attacking mid as my lineup. But you're right. You know, he's obviously a talented Mitzal, and he's obviously a talented Trequartista. So if we have Rebic and he's also a good attacking midfielder, it makes sense to put a guy who's versatile in that left center mid spot who could play the Mitzal and could still pass the ball to Piontek and or whoever's up top. You know, he always has an eye for goal, an eye for the attacker. So it's good to have him up front. But you're right. He's very solid as a Mitzal, and that's an important thing to have as well. Honestly, he's extremely similar to Bonaventura in that aspect, being, you know, multifaceted. But
nice phrase.
Thanks. But yeah, I would say, just to fuck with shit a little bit, give him a forward center mid position. So behind the attacking mids, but in front of the regular midfield.
I'm not even sure tactics. How that works. This is like Football Manager where you can change.
Yeah, you need to push him up a little bit. I mean, realistically, the game starts doesn't make a difference anyways, but just to appease everyone.
He's one of those players who will always find space and will always look to drive forward when he can, whether he's playing as a Mitzala or whether he's playing as a Trequartista. So, yeah, I think moving forward, we'll just see him kind of occupying the same spaces anyway. Who knows, might even play him as a regista because apparently Benacer's not good enough to start, according to @Madison_DT.
Thanks for the plug there, man. I appreciate that.
No problem. It's actually just a plug so people can fire the hate that you
unfollow.
Yeah.
Yeah, all 300 of them.
He just gets blocked tomorrow as 100 followers.
It'd be good. He needs knocking down a peg or two. @Pastori914 says, Rade hasn't been playing. When fit do you guys think he'll be a starter? No.
Is that Rade Krunic or is that the other
Rade
dude's name?
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah, he's not going to be a starter at all this season.
What other dude's name?
Fucking the new guy that we got today. I don't know
Rebic.
What his first name is. But what's
people
his first name?
Think, oh, Ante.
Ante. Okay. Never mind. Yeah, there's a difference there.
Okay, cool. Maddie?
Don't think he'll be a starter. Maybe over Benacer, but I'm not too sure.
Nice. @TommyTank23, do you think new signings will gel together quick enough to mount a serious top four push this season?
That's the million-dollar question.
That is literally, you know, we'd stop recording the podcast, I guess, if we knew the answer to that. my answer is I hope so, but if you were to ask me now for a gut feeling, do I think we'll get in the top four? No, I don't. I think there's too many pieces that are, you know, still kind of moving. We've bought six players in over the summer and we're yet to see any of them completely fully integrate yet. It's going to take time. Other teams have brought in players as well, don't get me wrong, but I just feel like the patience might not be there as much. And Giampaolo seems to now be insistent on changing systems and being tactically flexible and that kind of stuff. It's all things that don't really point towards us getting the top four finish this season. But who knows?
I disagree with that. Okay. I think his willingness to be flexible with his tactics shows adaptability, shows that we can change things up depending on who we're playing, you know, because one formation is not going to work against every single team. And I think it's good that Giampaolo is open to the idea of having more than one, that he saw a flaw in the system that he's has, you know, tried and true. And the fact that he's willing to change it immediately shows that he's quick to adapt and doesn't wait for an absolute fucking disaster before he says, okay, something needs to change. And I think we're going to see that with players being rotated a lot more this season. Do I think it's going to give us a solid push? I'm going to say yes, not because they'll gel quickly because Giampaolo likes to wait on his new players, but because how well we did last season for that push, and I think we've improved. You know, I think it'd be really hard to say that we've gone backwards after this transfer window. So by that logic, I think we are going to make that push. But do they gel quickly? It depends on what's quick to you. You know, we have a 38-game season. We have so much more to go. Even if we fuck up the first, like, six games, we could still make a comeback. I mean, it's not going to happen that way, but it's possible. So I don't know. I think we could still get it.
Money? Anything to add?
I hope we can get top four, but we'll have to wait and see. I think it's a gamble, but, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I think we
Applebee's think... quality reply, Matty.
It was breathtaking insight.
The past, you know, three seasons, we've signed, you know, five plus players expecting to get top four, and I'm not going to get my hopes up because I think it's difficult to make such large changes to a team and have them mesh well enough to get top four, you know. Granted, a lot of our signings are not going to be starters, but it's still a lot to see.
Well, I appreciate the better input there.
There you have it, Maddy. I hope we get top four. Isn't getting his hopes up. oh dear. Right. Final question. I've lost it. I've absolutely lost it. Oh right. Okay. Final question comes from @CanSarahTops. I'm sure you'll go.
Oh, Eben. Evan's dope.
Yeah. Eben.
Whatever.
Is it Eben? Is it
definitely? I don't fucking know. We've only talked on Twitter.
Okay, yeah.
Give me a call and let me know.
Eben.
How do you say your name?
I thought it was Eben. Like Evan.
Yeah. Like Eben Almighty.
Yeah.
Well, I thought Isaac's name was Isk, so, you know, anything.
Yeah, but come on. Jeez. You've said things, man. You've said some things.
You said Ben Astaire wouldn't start. I believe, despite not getting a star signing, the moves through the Makata have been very savvy and give us good depth. He's given it a rating of 7 out of 10, which isn't too far from what those guys gave it. This is the interesting part of the question. I mean, it's all good, but we've talked about it before. What moves do you see happening in the winter?
That is a really tough question to answer because I don't know where the whole's going to be.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know at the moment what the strong deficiencies are in this squad. My guess is that we actually don't really have a natural backup centre forward at the moment. Liao could potentially do that, but I've got a feeling we might find ourselves short on goals.
I bet we recall Andre Silva.
Shut up.
No, I think the one thing we're going to have a hole in is a centre back. I think that's what we're going to go for in the January window.
Mm-hmm. Mad Dog?
I think we're going to strengthen the defense.
Okay.
Mad Dog,
yeah. Right, so here's my bold prediction. I'm going to be a bit more specific than just saying sign a striker. My prediction is that Conte's not going to be happy with the game time that he's getting. He's going to leave. He's going to go to somewhere in Syria, and we're going to sign Serge Aurier. There you go.
Isn't he going to be happy with game time?
Conte, Andrea Conte.
Oh, I forgot about him.
Yeah, me too.
There you go. Maybe
I think that's likely. He'll definitely leave.
Yeah, I think so. If he doesn't get the game time, like we don't have three competitions this season. So if the rumors were true and he's already worried about his future at the club, then I think once January comes around, he might be looking for somewhere else. Yeah, so that's it, everybody. Makato Madness is done. We'll go back to just basically covering games exclusively from now on, which should be fun. We've got a little international break. We'll have to come up with something to do for next week's episode. Obviously, we'll have a game preview to do, but no game to recap. So, yeah. But yeah, in the meantime, thank you for listening. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter @OllieFisher or @KilpinChronicle for some more explicit Milan-based rants. I've been joined, as per usual, by Anthony Torgrud.
Yeah, I think I'm everyone's favorite host here. That's probably a given. So thanks, guys, for the continued support. And you can find me on Twitter @Torgrud45.
I'm everyone's least favorite, probably, after this episode. But you guys can go ahead and give me a pity follow @Madison_GT and give me some shit.
Mm. Or if you do follow him and you feel the need to unfollow him, please let us know. Tag us in the tweet just to let us know why you're unfollowing Madison. That'd be good.
We'll read them all off next week.
Do you know what we should do next week? A roast episode where we ask people to roast us and we read them out.
No, I'll cry. People are mean on Twitter. I pretend to be tough.
Yeah. It's an international break, though, so it'd be a fun episode to have.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah, cool. Right, yeah. So thank you very much for listening, everybody, and we will catch you in a week's time.
Abate la rimette dentro. Esce Radu. Porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio! Lava!